From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is typically made in other states, maybe even other countries. And for years, Washington State has hosted the annual Riesling Rendezvous, an event that brings in some of the finest winemakers, growers, and journalists from around the world. And they go to the Pacific Northwest. The conference is a way to connect people from different continents, all focused on Riesling. But this year, the Riesling Rendezvous is on hiatus, and the Finger Lakes has stepped in to host what is kind of a companion event, meant to be a global celebration of Riesling and its prime regions. Make no mistake, it's also a chance for the Finger Lakes to position itself at the center of the world stage. And so the inaugural FL Excursion will happen in July, an international conference over several days, with public events mixed in with tours and industry conversations. This is really a coup for the Finger Lakes. Some of the very biggest names in wine will be here, and that does put some pressure on the region to step up and look good, from the wines that are selected, to restaurants, to lodging. The event will be held from Sunday, July 1st through Tuesday, the 23rd of July. Now, we've asked the organizers of the event to join us this hour, and later we'll talk to industry professionals about their views on how the Finger Lakes fits in a world context. And our guests are joining us from our WEOS studios in Geneva at Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM. Our thanks to Greg and Kelly and the team, always doing a great job with us down there. And let's welcome our guests who are there in our WEOS studio. The co-chairs of FL Excursion, Oscar Benka, who's also co-owner of Herman J. Wiemer Vineyard. Oscar, welcome. How are you?
Hello. We're very well. Thank you for having us.
Also with us is the co-chair, Kelby Russell, who is a winemaker for Red Newt Cellars and Empire Estate. Kelby, hello. Welcome to you.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, Kelby, you told our colleague Kelly Walker that this is essentially an international coming out party for the Finger Lakes. Why'd you put it that way?
I think it's just such a big international event that we haven't had a chance to participate in the past or to host in the past. So with the world stage kind of focused on whatever region is coming in and hosting it, we wanted to position ourselves there and to show that we belong on that stage as well.
You view it that way, Oscar?
Absolutely, yeah. We're ready for it.
Well, in a moment, we're going to dive into all the details, how they made this happen, and what we can expect, especially for people who might be wondering about public events and what's possible coming up here. But for first, just a brief diversion from the Finger Lakes to the Great Lakes. The water level on Lake Ontario keeps rising, and Governor Andrew Cuomo has been trying to get the word out this week about lake conditions and the steps needed to prepare for potential flooding. Now, he spoke just about an hour ago with WXXI News Director Randy Gorbman about that situation.
Let me start off first, Governor. I know you've been really trying to make the rounds and getting the word out about the danger of the lake flooding along the south shore of Lake Ontario. Where do we stand now, and where do we stand in terms of the state response right now?
Well, the lake is now at flood level. What we're now fearing is Mother Nature will send some wind our way, or more rain, and it's actually the waves that would now create the flooding because the lake is at flood level. So if the wind picks up and there are waves, we're going to have a problem. We had a state emergency declaration yesterday, which does several things. First, practically, it reduces speed limits within 1,000 miles of the shore to 5 miles per hour for boat traffic, because boat wakes would only exacerbate the problem. It also gives us more ability to work with local governments and private landowners and accelerate some procurement. We've done hundreds of thousands of sandbags. We have pumps deployed all across the shoreline, and it's about 400 miles of shoreline. We're purchasing more temporary dams, what they call aqua dams, which are a new product because of these climate change problems that have come up, which is a 9-foot-wide, 4-foot-high water barrier that gets filled and operates as a temporary dam. And we're working with local governments to get ready. We went through this in 2017, so we know the areas that are prone to flood first. And we're doing everything we can to get ready. Obviously, Mother Nature at the end of the day wins, but we're doing everything we can to get ready.
Sure, Governor. I know it's hard to predict, as you mentioned, with the winds and weather factors, things like that, but the fact that we have gone through this, unfortunately, just a couple of years ago, are we better prepared? I mean, might any damage we see be somewhat muted because of the steps that we I say, being the state and the various communities along the lake, have taken since then to maybe make it a bit easier this time around?
We are better prepared for a disaster, but there's no way to really prevent the disaster from happening. And if it does happen again, yes, we'll be better prepared to handle it. But I think it'll also be a point in time where we're going to have to think of a new strategy. You know, they tell me all the time, this is a one in a 100-year flood. Except we have five one in 100 year floods every year. So we have to recalibrate. And this was 2 years ago, and now it's again this year. And the IJC, which is the regulatory body, says there's nothing they can do. It's a function of the climate and the extreme weather. If, and I'm still hoping Mother Nature gives us a break, but if we do go through this again, I think we then have to take a different look at what we do in the aftermath. And you can't just continue to build on the shoreline and not expect these floods to happen in the future. And that will cause us to come up with a different reality that we're planning for. And should we replace the home, or should we build the home back differently? Should it be raised? Should it be on stilts? Should we put up other barriers along the shoreline, understanding that this is a new reality? This is the new normal. And let's prepare for it.
Yeah, Governor, if that happens, and I know you've been talking about that a bit today in terms of how people rebuild, can the state have some impact in terms of maybe actually deciding whether certain homeowners get aid or not if they don't follow certain guidelines in terms of how they rebuild?
Short answer is yes. We would do it with the local communities, and it's really common sense. Look, we spent $100 million to rebuild after the 2017 flood. The same places that we rebuilt may very well get affected by this flood. What sense does that make? You know, once you come to the recognition of the reality that this is now a recurring situation, it's insanity to then continue the old course of conduct. But hopefully, first of all, we don't have the same situation in 2017. I'm an optimist, otherwise I couldn't do this job. But if it does happen, yeah, I think we have to take a beat, we have to take a pause, and work with the local communities and say, rather than just spending millions to rebuild and be in the same situation, let's take a different look.
Sure. Governor, we have had some concerns expressed by some of the business owners, especially in the Sotus Bay area in Wayne County, worried about all the publicity about the lake will keep people away, not only for the foreseeable week or two, but, you know, maybe into their important summer season. Are you having any those concerns in terms of how things turn out for a lot of these commercial operators along the lake, you know, for the entire summer?
Look, there's already been an economic impact. Many of the businesses are flooded. You know, if they're along the shoreline there, and I've been visiting communities over the past several weeks, the water is over the docks, et cetera. So there's already an economic impact. I don't think it has anything to do with the publicity. People look out the window and they see the water coming over the wall. You know, it doesn't. The situation is obvious. So no, there's no danger for people who would come to use the lake. You know, there's people are fishing. The fishing is actually great so far this season. And if you come to enjoy the lake, there's just more of it to enjoy. But if you're a business that is physically impacted by the flooding, that's obviously a problem. And that's happening to a lot of businesses.
Sure. And I know you've been obviously very vocal about the action or inaction, as some people have put it, of the board that is run by the International Joint Commission. As you know, they just recently finally appointed or confirmed the new members from the U.S. side and the Canadian side as well. Have you had any conversations with the chairperson from the U.S. side, former assemblyperson Jane Corwin, and or do you expect any relief to happen because of the new IJC makeup here?
Well, I think this is good news. We have a New Yorker on the IJC, and the reason I have been speaking up is because I represent the people of New York, and I understand the concerns of Canada and the other communities, but I fight for New Yorkers. That's my job. I think having a New Yorker on the IJC is going to be a big improvement. I understand their frustrations also. Because they're dealing with a lot of communities and there has been a change in the weather pattern. But I think we just need clarity. If the IJC's position is the volume of water is much higher and it cannot be effectively regulated, then say that. And then let Canada and let New York and the other states figure out how to deal with it. But I still don't understand why they don't release more water earlier in the season. They know we're going to have this problem in the spring. They know in May when the snow melts with the increased rain, we're going to have this problem. So I just want clarity on the situation. And if they say, look, it's a force of nature and we can't do anything, even that would be welcome, because then we know what we're dealing with. I've never heard an effective answer, and I don't understand why they can't release more water sooner. I understand that inconveniences some other interests, but we had, after 2017, we had 3,000 homes damaged. That's thousands of people's lives, hundreds of millions of dollars in damage. And that was only 2 years ago, and we are in the same place again. And if the wind picks up, it will be 2017 flood all over again. So we need an answer, and we need a solution. And that's what I'm looking for from the IJC, or we'll take matters into our own hand, and we'll understand that this is going to be a recurring problem, and then let's plan for that. You know, Sodus Point, these communities that get hit over and over again, let's have an honest conversation. And if this is going to be the situation going forward, then let's modify our thinking and our plans and redesign and build for a different future.
All right, Governor, thank you for joining us. And hopefully it won't be as bad as a lot of folks think, but we'll keep in touch.
If I can figure out how to stop the wind, then we'll really be in good shape.
All right, Governor.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
That's News Director Randy Gorbin talking to Governor Andrew Cuomo about the situation on Lake Ontario. More information, of course, on WXXINews.org. We turn our attention the rest of the hour back to the Finger Lakes now. And if you're just joining us, we open the hour by introducing our guests who are with us in our WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio Studios in Geneva, and they are the co-chairs of FL Excursion. Oscar Benka and Kelby Russell are with us, and what I'd like to do is just kind of get back to the guys and ask them to kind of explain for the listeners how they describe what FL Excursion is, because it's coming our way in July, but this is sort of a new thing, and it's a big, big deal internationally. You've got winemakers coming to the Finger Lakes region for 3 days from around the world. I mean, different continents. I think three of them at least, guys. I mean, Oscar, let's see here. Europe, Australia, North America, South America? I don't know. At least three continents, yeah? I'm trying to count them up here. What do you think, Oscar? Are you there? Can they hear us there? I don't know. Greg, maybe they don't hear us there.
Yeah, that's right. Not South America.
Oh, yeah,
we're looking at Austria, Germany. Let's see here.
Maybe we're on a bit of a delay. Can you hear me, Oscar? I bet you they're on a bit of a delay. It's like a mixed minus. So let's do this. They may not have the headphones in. Can we, Rob, get our only break of the hour? Can we do that now?
I hear you now.
Do you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you, Oscar. I just want to make sure that you hear me. Can you hear me now? Yeah, no, it's a big old mixed minus. Let's take our only break of the hour. We'll see if we can reset that, and we'll come right back with Oscar and Kelby talking about FL Excursion next, right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the transition from teenage years into adulthood is hard enough for anybody. For families with kids who have intellectual or developmental disabilities, there are a lot of questions about the transition into the adult world, and that can be a daunting experience. So how can they learn about what to do next? College services or independent living or financial planning? An upcoming conference aims squarely at those questions. We'll tackle them next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We are talking this hour about the brand new FL Excursion. And if you want to check out more information, they've got a new website. In fact, I think they're just putting tickets for public events on sale now, and you can jump online and check it out. FL Excursion, spelled FLXcursion, C-U-R-S-I-O-N. I did not get a degree in spelling, but the co-chairs of FL Excursion, Oscar Benka and Kelby Russell, are joining us from our Finger Lakes Public Radio studios in Geneva, WEOS. Hi, guys. Say hello again. Let's make sure we've got each other now. Hello.
Hello. Here we are.
Very good.
Friend.
So that was just a little blurb of technology. We're all squared away now. So guys, I'll start with you, Oscar. Why don't you kind of describe for our listeners what the excursion is meant to be?
Yeah, so it's a big gathering for industry people, you know, producers, wine directors, writers, and that's gathers for seminars, educational seminars, and also, of course, networking and such. And since we are in the Finger Lakes, we are focusing on Riesling regions around the world. So we will have producers from Austria, Germany, Australia, and of course America, gathering here. So we have these Riesling rock stars coming to the Finger Lakes, and because they're here, we would like to add on additional events. So we're hosting a big grand tasting down at Lakefront in Geneva, July 21st, for the public to enjoy all these producers coming into the area and enjoy their wines and so forth.
Okay, and on that grand tasting, by the way, I'm looking at your calendar now. So 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock on Sunday, July 21st. Tickets available for $60. I suspect that if they're gone, you're not going to be able to help anybody. So are they available now?
They are available as we speak. We're doing it. You can go ahead and go online and buy the tickets.
All right, on the website for FL Excursion, if you want to check it out, tickets for the Grand Tasting. Is that the only big public event that people ought to know about, Oscar?
Well, in addition to that, we're going to have extra curriculum events around this week. For example, the week leading up to the Grand Tasting, we are having a gentleman called Paul Greco, who has Terroir Wine Bar in New York City. He's doing a wine bar pop-up downtown Geneva.
That's very
cool. That leads up to the event, which is going to be pretty cool too.
That's very cool. So Paul, for those who don't know Paul, Paul is you know, sort of just the punk rock face of the New York City wine scene, and he's kind of always got his hand on the interesting counterculture or emerging trends. And so he's going to do a pop-up. Where is he going to do that? In Geneva, you say?
Downtown Geneva, yeah, on Linden Street.
Of course, on Linden Street. Yes. I should have known that. Everything's happening on Linden Street. Is there anywhere else? So on Linden Street in Geneva, one of the really neat places in the entire Western New York scene for food, dining, and an intimate sort of drink experience. So Paul Greco will be there. Terroir will have a little pop-up there. Can I ask both of you, you know, someone like Paul from New York City is a big and important name and sort of a, he's a bit of a tastemaker in the industry. How do you get someone like that? And he's been coming up here. I know that this won't be his first time to the Finger Lakes, but how do you get someone like that to notice what you're doing? What's that process been like?
You know, I think we've been working as individuals for a long time, bringing our wines down to the city, meeting with some of these tastemakers. There's a lot of interest in the wines, and it's almost felt like we're a bit of a sleeping tiger as a region, that we've got all this positive press buzz about us, and people are interested in the Finger Lakes, and producers around the world are interested in the Finger Lakes, but we've never really had an event to celebrate that. So I think when we were coming up with the idea for this event, Oscar and I decided to go all in with all of our connections, as it were, and really see who we could pull the trigger to get up here. And it's just been amazing, the response. People have been so excited at the idea of this event, so excited to help out and be a part of it. It's almost been overwhelming how much engagement we've got right off the bat. People are coming up with ideas we never would have thought of, which is always the best sort of idea.
Yeah, and Oscar, Oscar and I were speaking just last evening about the fact that, you know, the Riesling Rendezvous in Washington has been going on for a number of years now. This is not an exact replica of that, but given that there's a hiatus in the Rendezvous, how much of this is meant to be sort of a replacement for that event, and how much of it is meant to be sort of a standalone event, Oscar?
Well, it's actually more a standalone event. Mm-hmm. We had kind of planned for this prior. We wanted to make sure that Finger Lakes shows up on the world map, and it was kind of time for us to make a stand and be this gracious host for all these world producers. And so we had planned for it. It was almost accidental that the Riesling Rendezvous took a little break from their event this year. So we became it. So this is the only game now in North America when it comes to the Riesling conference for this year.
And so a happy accident, but a lot of pressure. I mean, Kelby, what do you expect journalists who have never been to this region to find? And how do you feel about, you know, how much confidence do you have that no matter where they go that week, you're going to feel pretty good about what they find?
That's a great question. And it was a happy accident that happened to fall in the middle of harvest last year, which led to a little bit more confusion and chaos on our end as we tried to coordinate taking over for the Riesling Rendezvous slot in the midst of, you know, never-ending rain in 2018. I think that what we're expecting for writers who haven't come before is to be blown away by the landscape and the wines that they finally get to try, because so many of them, we think of the Finger Lakes as really starting to explode in a larger sense. But even on the West Coast, there are a lot of major tastemakers and somms and writers that rarely, if ever, try Finger Lakes wines. And they're always excited to try them. And this is the chance for them to actually come and get a real collection of them. But I think, crucially, it's not just a Finger Lakes event. The fact that we're showing our wines on equal footing with some of the great Riesling producers from around the world is really what shows off our terroir and shows off what we can do here.
Now, I have to say, you know, especially knowing Oscar the way I do, I'm a little surprised, Oscar. So I don't mean to out you in this way, but here's why I'm surprised. You have very, very high standards. Is that fair to say, Oscar?
Well, it depends. Everything is relative, I guess.
I don't mean like with your fashion or your hair. I mean for...
He looks fabulous here, so...
Oscar, he's probably thinking, no, I really do on all of those things. on the wine side, no, Oscar is a very affable person, but I've grown to know you as someone who has very, very high standards. And so I'm going to ask you both a question, and I don't think it would be fair for me to actually ask for a number, but what I want to ask you is this. Whatever the number is in your head, I want to know if it's grown. And that the number is this. The amount of wineries that if an international figure, one of the best winemakers in Germany, one of the great wine writers in Europe, if they showed up in the region sort of unannounced, what is the number of Finger Lakes wineries that if they happen to knock on their door, you'd say, good, they're in the right place, versus ones you go, oh, no. And the answer, my guess, Oscar, for you, whatever that number is, and you don't have to give me an actual number, is very small. I don't know if it used to be one and now it's three, or if it's a dozen or two dozen. But what I want to ask you, in the last 10 years, has that number grown?
Well, let's see here. I mean, the good news is that the number is actually, it's growing. And... But I also feel that when you have international people looking at the region, still today, the region is rather young. So you have to see the region as a rookie, up-and-coming rookie. And I think the excitement of of our wines is also just as much in the future as it is now. So there's definitely a good amount there, but there will be more to come.
Okay.
What was that as a diplomatic answer?
Senator Binka, that was pretty good. That was just enough of an answer while dodging the question. Kelby, how do you feel about that?
I think the number has grown dramatically, I'd say, especially in the last 10 years. And I think something that Oscar and I both probably feel like sometimes is a bit of ambassadors for our region. And we have many visitors come, whether they're staying at Weimar or whether they come and stay with me, and they're always interested to go and try wineries around the Finger Lakes, and it's become markedly easier to recommend wineries that we know that they're going to have a great experience at, both the experience and also the wines. And I think that's, to be very blunt, when we were thinking about putting this event on, we looked at each other. I think it was on a flight to Chicago that we were going to an event together at, and we said, do we want to push our chips to the middle of the table right now? Is this the time to really push the Finger Lakes? Do we feel confident in what we have here? And we looked at things and we looked at each other and we said, yeah, this is the time. The region's ready for it.
I think it's an important distinction to make here, that top flight versus sort of what the middle looks like, at least in my experience, and I'm, certainly nothing close to the professional that our guests are, but from my experience, a couple of things happen. Over time in any wine region, there is an improvement of the floor, that there are fewer flaws, that there's a lot more sort of solid, if not spectacular, things happening. And then the ceiling also pushes up, up, up. But it takes some really innovative people to move the ceiling at the top end, especially in a region where the climate's difficult the last few years. I would love to ask our guests how they feel about the weather in the Harfest in 2017 and 2018 versus 2016. Totally different. But Oscar, is that fair to say that any region, you talk about the Finger Lakes as a young region, sort of up and coming, but you can point to anything, Bordeaux, Beaujolais, the Mosel, the Finger Lakes, Walla Walla. There's going to be dozens and dozens and dozens of producers, and there's going to be a lot of sort of middle of the road stuff. But that's part of the process of getting that floor up. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we're hitting it on both sides here when it comes to the Finger Lakes. I think the average quality has increased tremendously. So that would be the floor. And then you will see, as the region develops and we get more attention, but we also get more resources in place, wineries are able to afford vineyards and professional people coming in and so forth. So we are enjoying pushing the boundaries also at the moment. I think one thing that what we're looking at now as the main thing to look at is what we do viticulturally, right? How do we deal, yes, with the challenging weather that we have, but also how do we manage our vineyards? How do we get the best quality out of the fruit? How can we elevate the discussion between the growers and the winemakers and make that a little bit more sophisticated? I think, again, we are doing it as we speak. So you will see it probably increase in both bars.
Well, my understanding is that both of our guests, Oscar Benke and Kelby Russell, you travel a little bit. You do, you go to other cities and kind of do little seminars, I'm not exactly sure what you do, but I've read that you have done some things. I don't know if you go to Manhattan. What do you guys do on the road? What's your road show?
So the road show started up last year. It's Weimer with Oscar, myself with Red Newt, Nancy Ireland with Red Tail Ridge, and then Lisa Morton from Ravines. And the four of us have been going to major markets that we haven't developed as a region necessarily. So we've actually avoided Manhattan so far, given that many of us are down there and have pretty good market penetration. And instead have gone to spots like Washington, D.C. or Chicago or Miami. One, because they're fantastic dining scenes, but two, because Finger Lakes wines and a real appreciation for the different terroir and the different vintages that we have haven't really penetrated those markets. And it's a chance for us to combine our efforts and combine our sort of impact and get a lot of people in the same room at the same time that we could never hope to get if we were there by ourselves, and show them what we do as a region, both wine-wise, but also as a collaborative. I think that's a powerful story as well.
Oscar, go ahead, Oscar. Yeah.
So to add to that, Riesling or Finger Lakes is showing up now in national media, and wherever there's a culinary center, they are interested in our wines. So, for example, next year we'll go to Portland, and we'll add probably another round to Chicago, and maybe even go to the West Coast. So we've seen, again, a very positive feedback when we show up in these markets.
But I do want to know, and by the way, I'll grab a couple of phone calls because our phone is ringing with listeners who've got questions. So Evan and Arondaquit, we'll grab you in a moment. Got another one coming in, so we'll come back to you in just a second on the phone. But let me just ask as a follow-up. I sort of have always felt like for the Finger Lakes to sort of break through into the public consciousness, that the first thing that would happen is you'd get into sort of the cool kids club. You know, it's the it's not Bordeaux, obviously. It's not Burgundy. But it's in that list of regions that when sort of the knowledgeable customers go out to eat in Manhattan or other places, and they go, oh, cool. Like, you've got the Finger Lakes on the list. You've got the Jura. You've got, you know, Cru Beaujolais. You've got, I don't know. Now I'm outing myself as sort of dated in what the cool kids are doing. But you'd want to be on that list because that's where maybe some of the hype comes from. But at some point, you got to break through to a little bit more mainstream consciousness as well. Is that roughly the path, Oscar? And do you see those things happening?
Yeah, I think it's on many levels. I think it's the perception of Finger Lakes and Riesling, depending on where you are, is a fascinating roller coaster. Because we are with the hipsters in Brooklyn, but then we have to introduce New York wine in Tennessee as what is New York wines. But I think, again, the awareness of just fine wine in general, the American public are drinking better wines and they're more interested in wines, and we're enjoying that too. So I guess it all depends on the market. And I think even locally, even in Rochester and Syracuse, it's not matured at all. We have still big, big ways to go there to get everyone involved. But it depends a lot on the market. But we're definitely with the cool kids. You know, if you have in these in markets further away from New York, if you put it that way, and then depending on where you are in the state, you either have it as a general market or so it depends a little bit, actually. It's a little difficult.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Kelby, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the interesting thing with the Cool Kids Club is that we're actually seeing success with exporting our wine, which is one of the, you know, a good sign of maturity of the region or growing maturity, but also is just wild as, you know, growing up here to think of being in Shanghai showing wine from New York State and seeing people buying it and putting it on wine lists at major accounts is just mind-boggling. It's something that makes me feel good about the future of the region, but it's also a testament to how much interest there is for the region now and, you know, the chance for us to grow with that interest.
Well, that's why I'm thrilled that there are good sommeliers, and we're going to talk to sommelier coming up here, but also, you know, stores like Pinnacle on Monroe and Parkway on Dewey Avenue in Rochester. There are places where people just, they are working so hard to get way beyond sort of the same old, same old. And now the Finger Lakes is positioned with the upcoming FL excursion to have the world's attention. So if you're just joining us, July 21st through the 23rd is the brand new FL excursion. You can jump online. Guys, what's the website, Oscar and Kelby?
www.flxcursion.com, and that has information about the full conference and also the grand tasting in particular. That's the main public outlet for the event.
The big public grand tasting is on Sunday, July 21st from 3 to 6. It's on the Geneva Lakefront, but they've also got Paul Greco from New York City coming up to do a pop-up wine bar in Geneva for the week before. So a lot of cool things happening, not just industry insider stuff. And that's why we're talking to our guests. Let's grab a couple of phone calls. Evan and Irondequoit first. Go ahead, Evan.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the role of academia in this. I don't know if you've read it, but there was a paper put out by Jan van Aert and Ronaldo Izzo, one best paper at the most recent SPIE conference, talking about how they're using technology to help improve yields and quality in vineyards. So I was just wondering what role people like Jan van Aert would play in these conferences to come.
All right, Evan, thank you. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially with Cornell in our backyard, you know, making sure that the Academy is part of this conference has been a key thing for us. I think it's also an interesting part that we can bring to the conference that maybe wasn't there in Seattle. This is, we have access to researchers that wouldn't necessarily be headed out to Seattle or to other events. So the Monday afternoon for the conference participants, there's an entire geeky track looking at some of the science of lees contact and sulfur management and yeast and, you know, vessels and these kind of very esoteric topics. But we have some world-class researchers that are going to be there. And then Tuesday afternoon, maybe even more interestingly, we're not just a Riesling conference. We're going to have these companion grape seminars. And one track of the companion grape seminars is, how are people responding to climate change in the vineyard around the world? What are the alternative varieties that people are working on, both new varieties to their region and also the research of how to deal with these things? I think that's something that's fascinating to all of us in the industry.
All right, Charlie in Seneca Falls next on the phone. Go ahead, Charlie. Hi, Charlie. Are you there? Go ahead.
Turn down the volume.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Two quick stories. My lady is Parisian. We've been together 15 years. The first time she came...
Uh-oh, Charlie.
...she watched Bomonti as a... I knew she liked champagne and thought, we'll see how it goes. She loved it. So suddenly, when I travel to France, I always take Goosewash Spumante. I bring back French wines, by the way. I'm not a snob. But fast forward many years, I'm working in a factory near Auxerre, which is on the edge of Chablis, and about an hour from the Champagne. Always when I'm in a factory, I give a bottle of wine when somebody does a good job. So Jose in the factory did a good job. I give him a bottle of the Goosewash Spumante, and his face said, well, maybe I'll use it to take the bugs off my car, but oh, thank you very much. And I didn't say anything. A month or so later, he's throwing a party, runs out of wine, opens the Goose Watch. The next time I'm in the factory, everybody, how do I get a bottle of that delicious wine? Oh, it's so fresh. It's so different. I love it. I've done it in Asia, done it in South America. New York wines are very well accepted. If you can get them out to people and let them try it.
Well, I appreciate the story. Yeah, thank you, Charlie. I relate to that. I was at a conference in Italy, in a town called Brescia, and it's near one of the cool kid wine growing regions called Franciacorta, and there were winemakers there. And all the writers there had to bring a bottle of wine from whatever home region you were in, 200 writers from around the world. So, you know, if you're from Traverse City, Michigan, you're bringing Traverse City wine, and whatever the case may be. So I brought a couple of Finger Lakes wines, and I had an Italian winemaker march up to me, and through a friend who interprets, he was shouting and just said he wanted to know where this Riesling is from. It's the best he's ever had. What in the hell is the Finger Lake? So, those moments are really, really cool when you see them, when you open people's eyes, and I'm sure Oscar and Kelby have their own such stories, which could probably fill a day, just with the expectations people have and then turning them on their head. Though Oscar, to the point, is those stories are becoming more rare because the idea of the Finger Lakes as some sort of impossible dream is more rare. People are kind of getting it now, right?
Well, in some places, yes, but the world is big and we continue surprising people positively. So the stories are there. Yes, more stories.
Let's bring in someone who probably has a lot of thoughts to share about maybe what he thinks about the region and maybe where he first heard about it. His name's Destin Wilson, and he's a master sommelier based in New York City, co-founder of Verve Wine, which is an online marketplace for curated wines with brick-and-mortar locations in New York City and San Francisco. And if you saw the wine documentary called Somme, then you know Destin Wilson, who's on the line with us now. How are you, Destin?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Thanks for taking the time. So, some of our listeners may have seen Somme, and so they may recognize a little bit about your story. But I'm curious to know, given your background, when the first memory you have of really understanding what a Finger Lakes wine was. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was actually later on in my wine career. You know, when I was going through the Quartermaster Sommelier exam process, of course, we had to learn about New York wines and the wines from the Finger Lakes and Long Island and things like that. But I didn't really have a lot of exposure to them. You know, I kind of grew up in the wine world in Colorado and then in California, where we just didn't have them a lot locally, if at all. So I didn't really get to taste them very much until I moved to New York and started working at 11 Madison Park when I was running the wine program there. And, at this point, I had already passed my master's sommelier exam. So it was really, much later in my wine career that I kind of came across these wines and really started to learn them more intimately, more than just, reading about where the Finger Lakes are located and understanding the kind of subregions and the different lakes and things like that. And it was my good friend, Thomas Pastuschak, who, lived in the area for a while, and he was running the wine program at the Nomad Hotel, and he and I became great friends. That really, he's the guy that kind of brought a lot of exposure to those wines to me, and I quickly grew a really strong affinity for them, and recognized the quality, and we at the time, Beloved Madison Park was also, you know, kind of trying to be more New York in its focus, and it just tied in perfectly, and we built out a really strong New York section of our wine list, and I kind of dove in head first into the various wines, and you know, to this day, I'm still a huge fan. I think particularly the Finger Lakes is an extraordinary region with great potential and a lot of really high quality wines, particularly from like Riesling and Cabernet Franc, and you know, some really great sparkling wines that are made up there. I'm a big fan.
And so, Dustin, when you've got something from the Finger Lakes region on your list at a place like 11 Madison, what is the process that you're going through? Because you want customers to kind of broaden their focus a little from what maybe they're used
sure.
to. Are you sort of hand selling? Are you making individual recommendations? Are they asking questions? What's kind of a typical interaction like?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times there's various kind of strategies, if you will, to kind of get people to try them and open their eyes a little bit, because it's not always the first place that people go. So one really easy way to do it is I would fold a New York wine into, particularly, you know, a lot of times Finger Lakes Riesling into the pairing menu. So whenever I could pair a New York Riesling with a specific dish, and that was part of the pairing experience, that was a really great way to expose people to it. And most people who are doing pairings also are really open to learning new things and exploring different grape varieties in different regions. So that was really great. And then also, you know, just talking to people about who enjoy drinking things like Sancerre or, you know, kind of crisp, more mineral-driven, you know, higher acid, dry white wines. You know, because when you say the word Riesling, unfortunately, still a lot of people automatically think sweet and they think Germany and things like that. So when you pour something, particularly if I did it blind and showed them, hey, you know, this is a really, if you love Sauvignon Blanc, if you love whatever, you know, Albarinos or, you know, various types of dry white wines, you pour that for them, like, oh, wow, this is delicious. And then you say it's Riesling, and then you say it's from New York, and, you know, their eyes would pop. And that was always really exciting because I think the wines, in my opinion, really outperform the perception in those cases.
Sure. And so I, years ago, thought there was kind of a cycle that people have when they go through wine. First, they want something sweet, you know, typically when they're drinking wine early in their sort of wine-dom. And then they kind of move into this, well, no, I want something dark and tannic and red and massive and slathered in enough oak to, you know, like the oak of a forest in one glass. And then they want something a little bit more character, and they come back finally to go, oh, Riesling was the best thing all along. Nobody told me.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of the cycle that people go through. So for you then, it's one thing to say, hey, the region is growing, it's doing a lot of good things, but it's another to say, I can reliably get something good from the region, even if I don't know the producer. So now, do you feel like it's still a small group of producers in the region? Do you feel like that group is growing that you can rely on? How do you feel about that?
I think the group is definitely growing. I wouldn't say that you could just kind of throw a dart
right.
and automatically hit you know, a really high quality wine just yet, but there is definitely a fairly large group and a growing group of producers that are making some really high quality stuff. I think, you know, in my experience anyway, I'm sure Oscar and Kelby would probably agree, you know, you go back like 10, 15 years or so, and I think a lot of the wines were designed for people kind of touristing through the area on the wine tours and buses and whatnot. So a lot of kind of lower qualities, off dry kind of sweet stuff floating around, and now I think where this, it's kind of flipping that on its head, and there's a lot of producers like these guys who are doing really high quality stuff, and you know, people are starting to recognize the potential of the region and jumping on board with that, which I think is really exciting, because now it's like you're starting to see more and more producers venturing in that direction rather than, you know, just accommodating the kind of local tourist scene.
Well, before I let you go, are you coming to the Finger Lakes in July for the excursion?
Absolutely. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
So what are your goals when you're kind of in town for a few days here, and it's a chance to not only see a region, but you've got, you know, some of the really top winemakers from Germany, Austria, Australia. You've got, you know, journalists from around the world. What are you going to spend your time here in the Finger Lakes doing in July?
Oh, man, I'm just going to talk to as many people as I can. I'm just really excited to be around so many people with great knowledge of their particular regions and the wines that they work with. And the tracks that are set up for all of these seminars, I think, are super, super interesting. And I'm really excited to hear, how they go down and what everyone has to say and ask a lot of questions and, get really nerdy and have fun.
No, it's great. It's great. And Dustin, I think of it as, anybody who knows someone in your sort of social circle who's just an amazing cook and host and entertainer, and they're always hosting the meals. And then for years you've been going, one of these days I can host, I can do it. And they're going, yeah. And then that person dies. Or maybe they just go away for a week. Maybe not dies, because Washington State didn't die. The Riesling Rendezvous didn't die. But they go away for a week, and they go, all right, you're up. You're hosting dinner. And you go, oh, my gosh, I really have to pull off something great here. The region, I think, is probably going to do it. This is not going to be the Fire Festival of Wine. This is going to be something really special because, and I sound like a promoter. I'm a journalist. I don't mean to be a promoter at all. I just happen to know a lot of the people involved. But do you have are you pretty confident that your colleagues are going to like what they find here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the level of talent and the, the people that are attending this and going to be participating and putting on the panels and doing all this, all the programming all weekend are really, really, I mean, some of the best in the world, not even just in New York, but in the world. And, it's an incredible group that's come together for this. And it's really exciting for Riesling, for the Finger Lakes, for New York wine. So I think it's going to be everything and more.
Thanks for taking the time, Dustin, and we will see you in the Finger Lakes July 21st through the 23rd for the excursion. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That is Dustin Wilson, a master sommelier based in New York City and was featured in the wine documentary Somm. He is on the list who will be here in July. And we've got a few minutes left with Oscar Benka and Kelby Russell, who are the co-chairs of the new FL Excursion, which is coming your way. FLExcursion.com if you want to check out tickets and information to the Grand Tasting on July 21st. Those tickets are just available now. So, Oscar, Kelby, you heard Dustin kind of giving his sense on where the region stands and what, what's required next. What is it, Oscar, I'll start with you and I'll ask both of you this question. What needs to happen next for the region to really break through in quality status where we have a larger group doing extraordinary things?
Well, I think we're on a trajectory to get there. I think the region is continuing to get influx of tourism, of now this big event, people talking about it. And what I think needs to happen, what we're seeing happen, is that you put these wines by the glass at national restaurants around the country. And we just talked about it before. I was a restaurant group in Florida who changed their Riesling, or if it was Austrian or German, to a Finger Lakes Riesling. Almost like it could be the default Riesling on wine lists.
Yeah.
So people are consuming it. That's one thing. But also the quality. I think, again, this is an organic growth. We will get there, and I think we are there on some levels. So, just keep plugging along here, I think.
Okay, Kelby?
Yeah, I think the one thing we haven't discussed as much, with the growth of quality, the one thing where the Finger Lakes is remarkably competitive is quality to price ratio. That's something that we've started to notice, especially when we leave New York State and go further afield. And I think in some ways we have New York City to thank for that. For us to break through in our quote unquote kind of local major market, that's the hardest wine market in the world to break through in. It's almost like trial by fire. So when Finger Lakes wineries have figured out how to crack that, and which many of us have and are growing there, when we go out into other regions with those same wines and the same price points, we're just able to run roughshod over a lot of the international competition, which I think is, it's kind of, that's just developing now, but it's a real advantage in our arsenal when we're out there that we can come with price points and wine quality that just make people's eyes bug out.
Go ahead, Oscar.
Yeah, I think, 5-10 years ago, we promoted the Riesling or the Finger Lakes as the local region here, right? To promote local wines.
Right.
And I think now where the next step is, what we're seeing is that we promote good wines that happens to be local.
Sure.
It's a different conversation.
Yeah, I think that's it's an important distinction.
Yeah.
And in our last minute here, I'll just say, anybody who writes about wine, you hear about movies, whether it's Somm, which we talked about, Or somebody told me to watch the new movie called Wine Country, Amy Poehler's group. I made the mistake of watching that one. And there's this scene in the film where they're, I think they're in Napa, and like it's the most stereotypical snobby wine. The person is like haranguing them for not picking up notes of apple. I mean, like that's not the experience. And you know, 30 seconds, guys. I mean, for what are we going to do to kind of still break down more barriers and get more people in the door?
I mean, to us, the FL excursion, just as we've envisioned it, is meant to be fun. It's meant to be super educational, but we want people to take photos and put them up on Instagram and to talk about what a great time they had and all these cool things. We want to, you know, it's why the conference is taking place around the Finger Lakes and not in a hotel room, because the days of the old wine sort of circle are done, and the Finger Lakes is primed to jump on that and actually succeed in the next era.
That's right. It could be rather underwhelming sometime, but join us at the Grand Tasting. You will learn more and talk about wines with us.
And it'll be fun. Tickets to the Grand Tasting available now. Jump online at flexcursion.com if you want to check it out. It's July 21st. That is a Sunday. And I want to thank the co-chairs of the brand new FL Excursion for bringing us the story and telling us all about it this hour, Oscar Benka and Kelby Russell. Thanks to both of you, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Greg and Kelly and the entire team at WEOS, Oscar and Kelby joining us in Geneva at Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS 89.5 FM. We hope that you are big supporters of WEOS as well. They're great partners. Short break, more connections coming up.